18. Marcy snuck through the warehouse, her rifle's strap an uncomfortable weight on her shoulder. She was glad for the trousers, they were quieter than rustling skirts, but she kept worrying that the scientists and workers in the room would notice the sound of her boots on the packed earth. Probably not. The warehouse was hardly silent. Though it was night and activity was muted, some people were still working. Along one side of the room, a few carpenters sawed lengths of wood, each stroke echoing back from the walls. The group of engineers made exclamations as they discussed aspects of the large vessel.
"They seem surprised by it," Marcy thought, "as if they're not the ones who built it in the first place."
Were they new to the project, then? Guards dotted the warehouse, but there weren't nearly as many as outside. She and Milan kept to the shadowed edge of the chamber, near the piles of boxes and supplies, but still had to pass uncomfortably close to a group of soldiers sitting at a small table playing cards. The soldiers didn't notice them. Eventually, Milan and Marcy managed to reach the south wall, which was one of the long sides of the rectangular building. Here, rooms had been built into the structure, and they were more furnished than the rest, complete with doors and the occasional window.
"Living quarters?" Marcy whispered, pointing.
"Maybe," Milan replied, crouching beside her. "So how are we going to find the spike?"
"I'd assume it's inside a safe of some sort."
"Maybe," Milan said. "Or it could be in a desk drawer in one of those rooms, or packed away in a box. Or hell, they may have just thrown it away. Suit only seemed to want it because he required proof that poor Relure had been dealt with."
Marcy took a deep breath.
"If that's the case, we'll have to interrogate Suit once Waxillium finds him. But I don't think they threw it away. We know the set is researching ways to make allomancers, and we know they're interested in hemallergy. They'd study the spike instead of tossing it."
Milan nodded thoughtfully.
"But it could still be practically anywhere."
Not far away, the scientists, led by a man with a limp, walked up a plank ramp, peering into the open side of the boat.
"It's him," Marcy thought.
"The same one from the train robbery." He was showing the newcomers around the project. They stepped inside.
"I've got an idea," Marcy said.
"How crazy is it?"
"Less crazy than tossing Wayne off a cliff."
"Not a high bar, but all right. How do we start?"
Marcy pointed at the hole in the hull that the scientists had entered through.
"We get in there."
Wax moved along behind the supply pallets in the direction opposite Marcy's, feeling as if he were stepping through the shadow of progress. He'd pondered the transformations that Elendil had undergone during his absence. Motor cars and electric lights, skyscrapers and concrete roads. It was like he'd left one world and come back to another. That seemed only the beginning. Enormous warships, technology that enhanced allomancy, bracers that one ferrochemist could fill and another could use. He couldn't help but feel intimidated, as if this behemoth ship were a soldier from another time come to stamp out all the dusty old relics like wax. He pulled up beside the last stack of planks in the line, Wayne joining him. The man yanked out his canteen, which was of sturdy, stiff leather, worked to the shape of a small bottle. He took a swig and offered it to Wax, who accepted it and downed a drink. He coughed softly.
"Apple juice?"
"Good for the body," Wayne said, tucking the canteen away.
"I was not expecting that."
"Gotta keep the stomach guessing, mate," Wayne said, "or it'll grow complacent and all. How are we gonna find your uncle?"
"Perspective?" Wax asked, nodding toward the middle reaches of the warehouse, where a complex network of temporary construction catwalks ringed the inside of the building. They were unpopulated in the night. "We'd have a view of the entire area, but wouldn't be too noticeable from below."
"Sounds good," Wayne said. "You up for it, though? You're gonna have to climb up there like a regular person. No steel pushes."
He didn't have any metal inside of him, too easy to use reflexively. His vials sat unused on his belt.
"I'll be fine," Wax said dryly.
He waited until nearby guards and workers had passed, then led the way in a low run along the shadows of the building. The lights were aimed on the ship, away from the walls. He had to hope that the few workers walking about weren't focused on the dark reaches of the large chamber. Two full-sized catwalks ran the length of the wall up high, and leading toward them were a series of ladders and shorter catwalks as landings to hold supplies. He grabbed the bottom ladder and climbed up one level, then another. By the third one, his arms were aching. He made himself lighter, which helped, but he still had to stop and catch his breath on the fifth tier. Just as making his body heavier granted him the strength to move his oversized muscles, getting lighter always seemed to cost him some of his strength. "Getting old," Wayne said with a grin, passing him and starting up the next ladder.
"Don't be dense," Wax said, grabbing the ladder below him and climbing. "I'm trying to pace myself. What if we reach the top and have to fight?"
"You can throw your wooden teeth at him," Wayne said from above. "Do some cane wagging as well. I'm sure you're cross about staying up so late."
Wax growled softly and climbed up onto the next tier, but in fact he was winded to the point that arguing was taxing. The younger man seemed to realize it and had a wide grin on his face as they climbed up the final two tiers to the bottom catwalk.
"I should deck you right in your grin," he grumbled as he joined the still-smiling Wayne on the catwalk. "But you'd just heal."
"Nah," Wayne said. "I'd fall over and groan. Considering your age, it's more important to make you feel you've accomplished something in a day."
Wax shook his head, turning and stepping to the side along the catwalk. The board under his foot immediately cracked. His leg slipped through, and though he caught himself and yanked the foot out, for the first time in ages, he felt a little of what others must feel at being up so high. That ground was far, far below, and he didn't have any metals in him at the moment. He growled and stepped around the hole.
"That was not my fault. The board was weak."
"Sure, sure," Wayne said. "It's okay, mate. Most folks put on a little weight as they hit their twilight years. S'natural and all."
"If I shot you," Wax said, "nobody would blame me. They'd probably just say, 'Wow, you lasted that long? I'd have shot him years ago.' Then they'd buy me a pint."
"Now that hurts, it does," Wayne said. "I—"
"Who are you?"
Wax froze. Then both he and Wayne looked upward toward the person leaning out over the railing of the upper catwalk, staring down at them. An engineer, by the looks of it, in a white coat over vest and cravat. He frowned at them, then seemed to recognize Wax, his eyes widening.
"Rust!" Wax swore, raising his hands as Wayne moved immediately, jumping up.
Wax gave him a boost, and he kicked off and grabbed the railing of the upper catwalk. The engineer started to cry out, but Wayne snatched the man's ankle, toppling him with a thump. Wayne swung up in a heartbeat, and another thump sounded. Wax waited, nervous. Moments passed.
"Wayne," he hissed, "are you up there?"
A moment later, the engineer's unconscious face appeared over the side of the catwalk, eyes closed.
"Of course he's up here,"
Wayne said from above, imitating the voice of the unfortunate engineer and wiggling the head like a puppet's.
"You just tossed that bloke up here, mate. You've forgotten already. Memory loss. You must be getting real old."
Technically, every person in the world was dying. They were merely doing it very slowly. Eirik's curse was not that he was dying. It was that he could feel it happening. As he shuffled down the hallways of the enormous wooden ship, he had to keep close watch on the floor, because the slightest dip or cleft could cause him to trip. When he gestured toward the wall where they'd found the burned maps, explaining to the other scientists, his arm felt as if it were strapped with a 10-pound weight. His left hand barely worked anymore. He could grip his cane, but he couldn't stop his hand from trembling as he did so, and he practically had to drag his left leg with each step. The shortness of breath had begun. His physician said that one day he simply wouldn't have the strength to breathe. On that day, Eirik would suffocate alone, unable to move. And he could feel it coming, step by excruciating step.
"And what is this, Professor Eirik?" Stanu asked, gesturing toward the ceiling.
Such a fascinating pattern.
We aren't certain, Eirik said, leaning on his cane and looking upward, a task that was surprisingly difficult. Rusts, he hadn't had trouble tipping his head back before, had he?
Step by step.
It looks like a ship,
Stenzi said, cocking her head.
Indeed, the golden pattern on the corridor ceiling did look something like a small ship. Why paint it here? He suspected it would take years to sort out this vessel's many secrets. Once, Eirik would have been content to spend his entire life picking through these oddities, writing about each and every one. Today, however, his entire life seemed far too short a period to be spent on such endeavors. Suit and Sequence wanted their weapons, and they could have them, for Eirik desired only one thing. A miracle.
Please continue with me,
Eirik said, walking down the corridor with his latest gait. He had to develop a new one every few months as more of his muscles grew too weak or refused to function. Step, cane, shuffle, breathe. Step, cane, shuffle, breathe.
What marvelous woodwork, Stenu said, adjusting his spectacles. Aunt, do you recognize what kind of wood this is?
Stenzi stepped up beside him, waving over the guard with the lantern so she could admire the strange hardwood. Eirik had shown similar interest in the ship's details at first, but each day his patience grew more strained.
Please, Eirik said. You shall have all the time you wish to study, prod, and theorize, but only after we have solved the primary problem.
Which is? Stenzi asked.
Eirik gestured toward an arched doorway ahead, guarded by a soldier with another lantern. She saluted as Eirik passed. Technically, he was an array, a rank of some influence within the set. Suit and his people had a high regard for scientific thought. The power and prestige, however, were meaningless to him. Neither could grant him additional breaths of life. Past the doorway, he waved for his group of five scientists to gaze upon the grand machinery that filled the hold of the strange vessel. It was like nothing he had ever seen, without gears or wires. It looked more like a hearth, only constructed of a lightweight metal with lines of other metals running away from it along the walls, like a spider web.
This ship, Eirik said, is filled with enigmas. You have noticed the odd patterns on the ceilings, but questions like those are barely the beginning. What is the purpose of the room hung with dozens of black hoods, like those worn by an executioner? We have found what appear to be musical instruments, but they seem incapable of making any sounds. The ship has an ingenious system of plumbing, and we have identified facilities for both men and women. But there is a third set of rooms with an indecipherable marking on the doors. For whom were these built? People of the lower class? Families? A third gender? So many questions. One question tops them all. We feel that answering it will provide the very linchpin. It is why I have called for you, the most brilliant minds of the outer cities. If you can answer this, we will gain the technological might to secure our freedom from Elendil oppression once and for all.
And what question might that be? Professor Jaby asked.
Eirik turned back to them.
Why, how this thing moves, of course.
You don't know?
Eirik shook his head.
It defies all scientific knowledge available to us. Some mechanisms were undoubtedly damaged in the crash, but as you can see, the vehicle is mostly intact. We should have been able to ascertain its method of propulsion, but so far it eludes us.
What of the navigators? Stenu asked. The crew? Did none survive?
They have been uncooperative,
Eirik said. And somewhat fragile.
Beyond that, the language barrier has so far proven insurmountable. That is why I invited you, Lord Stanu, as one of the world's foremost experts on ancient anti-verdant languages. Perhaps you can decipher the books found on this ship. Lady Stancy, you and Professor Javy will lead our engineers. Imagine the power we would have with a fleet of such ships. We would dominate the basin.
The scientists shared looks.
I don't know that I want any group having access to such power, Professor, Lady Stancy said.
Ah, right. These were not politicians. He should not employ the same rhetoric he had used when Suit sent him to gather funds from the wealthy.
Yes, he admitted. It will be a terrible burden. But surely you can see that this knowledge is better off in our hands, rather than in the hands of those at Ellendale. And think of what we will learn, what we could know.
They took to that better, nodding in turn. He would have to speak with Suit. These people must not see themselves as serving a totalitarian army, but a benign freedom movement seeking knowledge and peace. That would be difficult, with all these rusted soldiers marching about and saluting everyone. He prepared for an explanation of what they knew, intending to divert the scientists with promises of knowledge, when he heard a voice echo down the hallway.
"Professor Eirik?"
He sighed. "What now?"
"Excuse me," he said. "Lady Stancy, perhaps you will wish to inspect this fixture, which appears to provide some kind of power to the ship. It does not have electricity, so far as we can discern. I would value your unbiased opinions before I tell you what we have concluded. I must go deal with something."
They seemed amenable to this, enthusiastic even. He left them and limped down the hallway. Too slow, he thought, both of his walk and the possibility of progress from the scientists. He couldn't wait upon research, experimentation. He needed answers now. He had thought that on the train they might find... But no, of course not. An idle hope. He should never have left this project. Back in the hallway, he found no sign of the person who had called to him. Frustrated, he made it all the way back to the doorway before turning and searching down one of the side hallways. They should know better than to call for him. Could they not see the difficulty he had in traversing even a short distance? He started back up the hallway, but hesitated as he noticed a small storage compartment that had popped open on the wall. There were hundreds of these scattered throughout the ship, containing ropes or weapons or other items. But this one had dropped something to the floor. A small, silvery cube. His heart leaped in excitement. Another of the devices? Such luck! He had thought all these compartments searched by now. He struggled to pick it up, going down on his good knee and fishing for it, then lurched back to his feet. A plan was already forming. He would tell Suit that it had been recovered by one of his spies in New Saren. His punishments would be lifted, and perhaps he would be allowed to move to the second site, perhaps join the expedition. Excited, he sent a soldier to watch the scientists, then hobbled out of the ship, glad that something was finally going right for him. Maracy cracked a closet door within the strange ship, then looked after the man called Eirik, who limped through the gaping hole in the wall. Milan slipped out of a closet across the hallway from her, and held up a warding hand to Maracy, then snuck to the opening to watch where Eirik went. Maracy waited, anxious. Though her duties as a constable usually related more to analysis and investigation, she'd gone on her share of raids in Ellendale. She'd thought herself hardened. But Harmony! This mission was starting to rub her nerves raw. Too little sleep and so much sneaking about, hiding, knowing that at any moment someone could turn a corner and find you there, looking guilty as sin. Milan finally waved her forward,
and she scrambled out of the closet and knelt beside the Condra at the entrance.
"He went into that room,"
Milan said, pointing at a door along the wall.
"Now what?"
"We wait just a bit longer," Marcy said, "and see if he comes back out."
Wax prowled along the wooden planks of the interior scaffolding. Milan's spyglass let him get a good look at the ground floor, though he'd have much preferred binoculars. He scanned the whole area, noticing with interest as Marcy and Milan entered the ship. That ship. Something about it bothered him. He hadn't been on many boats, but the decks atop the enormous thing seemed off to him. Where were the masts? He'd assumed them torn down, but from above he could see no broken stumps. So, was this ship propelled through the water by a steam engine, perhaps? Gasoline? After rounding the entire building on the catwalk, he saw no sign of his uncle. "Still nothing?" Wayne asked as he lowered the spyglass a last time. Wax shook his head. "There are some rooms built into the north side of the structure. He could be in there. He might also be inside the ship."
"So what do we try next?"
Wax tapped the end of the spyglass against his palm. He'd been struggling with the same question. How did he find his prey without alerting the guards camped outside? Wayne nudged him. Down below, the limping man came back out of the boat. Wax focused the spyglass on him, watching as he crossed to one of the nearby rooms.
"Did he look anxious about something to you?"
Wayne asked. "Yeah," Wax said, lowering the spyglass. "What did those two women do in there?"
"Maybe they—"
"I don't want to hear your guess," Wax said. "Really."
"Fair enough."
"Come on," Wax said, leading the way back around the shadowed catwalks toward the ladders.
"You have an idea?"
Wayne asked.
"More of an impression," Wax said.
"Suit doesn't like talking to minions. Everyone we've interviewed indicates the same thing. He chooses underlings with some power and repute and lets them handle things. Miles, the marksman. My uncle loathes being bothered."
"So?"
"That man with the limp," Wax said, "probably has a similar role here. He's an allomancer, and I heard him referenced in Lady Calasina's mansion. He's an important underling, though perhaps not in favor right now. Either way, he likely reports directly to my uncle."
"So we follow him long enough," Wayne said,
"and we should find suit."
"Sounds good," Wayne said. "Unless he reports every afternoon at tea, which would have us waiting a long time."
Wax paused by the ladder, noticing with surprise that the man with the limp had already left the rooms. Wax's view was partially obscured by the massive ship, but he did catch sight of the man hobbling around the front of the vessel, again walking with a determined air. Wax held up a hand to Wayne, then crouched down with the spyglass. The limping man crossed the warehouse to a solitary room, much like a guard chamber, built into the southwest corner. A soldier here stepped aside, letting the limping man enter. As the door swung open, Wax got a good glimpse of the room beyond. His sister was inside. He almost dropped the spyglass. The door swung shut so he couldn't get a second glimpse, but he had seen her. Sitting at a small table, loomed over by the large coin-shot brute Wax had fought on the train.
"Wax?"
Wayne asked.
"It's Tilson," Wax whispered. "She's being held inside that room."
He found himself rising and reaching for one of his metal vials.
"Whoa, whoa, mate,"
Wayne said, grabbing his arm.
"I'm all for charging in recklessly and whatnot, but don't you think it would be best to talk this through? You know, before we get all, let's shoot this place up."
"She's here, Wayne," he said. "This is why I came."
He felt cold.
"She'll know things about her uncle. She's the key. I'm going in after her."
all right, Wayne said. "But Wax, doesn't it strike you as worryish that I'm having to be the voice of reason here?"
Wax looked down at his friend.
"It probably should."
"Yeah, I'll say. Look, I've got an idea."
"How bad an idea is it?"
"Compared to burning allomancy, Going in shooting and inevitably drawing the attention of all those guards, not to mention the set's kill squads? I'd say compared to that, it's a pretty damn good idea.
Tell me.
Well, say, Wayne said, sticking his gum to one of the catwalk's support beams, we've got this very nice engineer's outfit over there on the unconscious fellow, and ever since that party half a year back, I've been working on my smart person talk.